Sunday. Sci-Fi side of the microphone from the green light to the speed trap. Ray Garino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Garino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
All righty, Long Island. You have tuned in to Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, with your host, Ray Guarino, co-host Chris Switzer. Chris, how are you today?
Oh, I am just ginger peachy today, my brother, my longtime radio colleague. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Going to try and make a mess out of a radio show again today. We'll see what we can do. Maybe we'll clean it up later. I don't know.
Yeah. It was an interesting week. Automotively, believe it or not, with all the work in the school, I was able to go outside and do some work on the car. Especially, it was after Father's Day. I ran out and took advantage of the warm weather and decided to work on the car. And I've realized something, and I know you've seen the pictures because I had to send them to you, but I realized something about working on your vehicle after long periods of not working on a car. I realized this time, when you work on a car, bring your brain. It's the best tool in your toolbox. Bring the brain.
So that's where you keep it.
Yes.
All right.
Keeping it in my box, baby. Holy smokes. Did I tell you? I literally went into the job completely mentally unprepared. And
wow.
What
was the job?
Well, I was doing the rear brakes on the LeBaron because there were just so many things wrong with the brakes on this car.
Now I remember that story. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and let's put it this way. I think we kind of touched on it a little bit last week. The emergency brake is the handle in between the two seats in the front of the car, obviously.
Yes.
And when you pull the handle and it goes straight up to the 12 o'clock position and the car's still rolling, you know you're in trouble. You know you have a work job ahead of you.
Well, let me ask you this. So in your mind, because everybody's mind works different, what would be the diagnostic things you would think of that could be wrong at that point?
Wait a second, almighty. Hold on. Now, when we're talking trouble trees here on this program, you don't come to me.
Well, that's why I asked the question.
Because my trouble tree looks like a bush.
It goes straight
like
up.
A shrub. No, it is not that defined. You know, my trouble tree is like a rose bush. It's like it's all over the place. It's like poison ivy. It's everywhere.
In the spirit of wanting to do good radio that people could get in on by calling 516-256-9510. That's why I had to ask that question.
All right.
Really, what was the first thing you thought of? That's
to sell the car.
Geez, did I leave the stove on?
Yeah, right. Does the doorbell work? The first thing I think of is, did I have lunch? No, it's you're looking when the emergency brake is straight up and the car is rolling. Now you have to go into, like you say, diagnostic mode. Okay, take a look under the car. First of all, is the parking brake cable, because it is a cable, it's a primitive Henry Ford type cable, is it under the car? Yes, it's there. Okay. Good. Let's start with the visuals. That's fine, because like you say, like we say, start with the simple things first.
Right.
And since it's something I have not touched, gotta go simple first. Okay, so the obviously the mechanism is operating. You can tell it's operating. Okay, good. Now you go into the second thing. Is it completely out of adjustment? Maybe. Right. But in order to find out if it's completely out of adjustment, you got to pull the drums off the back of the car because they're drums. And right. in this case, we have to figure that out. So there were so many things I had done wrong. And that's why I say you got to bring your brain. You got to bring your A game when you're working on a car. And this was, I mean, the most intelligent thing I had done on this vehicle was actually get it up in the air and pull the tire off it. That was the most intelligent thing I did.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be stupid then. So because gravity is not your friend when you're working on vehicles. So I was able to put the car up in the air and chalk it. And actually, you know what I use as a chalk now? And I meant to, not to sidestep, no. but I'm going to do it anyway. What I do use now are scissor jacks.
Oh.
Because I have a problem with jack stands. Because yeah. the jack stands that I have, we all have them. I think they multiply like kittens sometimes. Yeah. But the jack stands that I have only have the three-hole notch and the peg attached to it. So you never have the correct adjustment with those jack stands.
Right.
Never, never have them. You can get, first of all, the jack stand is about 3 feet high. So you got to get the car just about barely touching the ceiling of the garage before you can get the jack stand under there under some sort of adjustment of one of the three.
Yeah.
So you never have a correct adjustment. So I never default to those. I have two aluminum-based screw jack stands that I will use if I'm going to put the car in the air because you can get an infinite amount of adjustment with them because it's a threaded rod. So it's kind of cool.
Where did they come from, by the way?
God only knows where I find anything, young man.
No, well, so, I mean, that's the thing. It could be, you know, it sounds like something that was historic through the family. Yeah, although it could have been an English town find.
It probably was an English town find because I don't ever remember my dad working with a scissor jack, with a jack stand, to tell you the truth. I don't think he ever owned a set of jack stands, my father. Yeah. How he made it through his automotive repair career is beyond me.
I think he did have a blackjack, though. So I think I saw the mark in the back of your head. But that's a different story. Now, myself, what I did many, many years ago, back in the early 80s, is I invested wisely in a set of four-legged jack stands from the tool guy with the ratchet center. You know, now I have four of them. They're like, I think they're, I forget if they're 5-ton or 10, maybe 10-ton jack stands. So they're heavy and they're clunky, but you could put a truck on them. And, and you know, it follows that mantra of buy good, buy once, and you're not going to get crushed.
Agreed. So. I totally agree. And jack stands are one of those things. And there are – I do have a set of jack stands that I did purchase from Englishtown that you that you did remind me of. There was a young couple that had a one of those box trucks, and they literally would dump their tools out and all the automotive supplies. We just basically dump it out onto the floor, and you'd see these rats all picking through of, you know, all these customers all picking through. Well, I bought a set of jack stands from those people at Englishtown, and they're fine because they're notched, so you can get a little bit more adjustment out of those over the three hole pegged jack stands. So I said, you know what, I'm not putting this car up high. I'm only going to, it's a dead axle in the back. It's a solid axle in the back because it's a four-wheel drive car. So what I'm going to do is I'm only going to put the car up high enough. I'll put the hydraulic jack under the dead axle, pick the wheel up about 2 inches off the ground. I figured that's about all you need. And the car is not going to be super high because you're only working on brakes. But you can't get a jack stand under that because the car's too low.
Correct.
So what I did was, at Englishtown, I was with you. I think I bought like a half a dozen scissor jacks.
Yeah, I remember that year. You were on a scissor jack safari.
And
like, you bought them from everybody.
Because I was paying like $1, $2 for them. It was great. It was cool.
And they still get a lot of money for those online, even, you know, new stuff. They get a lot of money for scissor jacks. They really do.
And you can't give them away at a flea market or a swap meet.
You go to a junkyard not anymore, but cars, that's what the car, after our venerable bumper jacks, they all came with scissor jacks. So usually the junkyards have a ton of those.
And you're not going to use a bumper jack to secure a car, obviously. No. So the scissor jack was the next best thing.
Yeah.
And I use these scissor jacks like for everything. It's so cool. So I slide two scissor jacks on either side of the hydraulic jack and wind them up to the dead axle. And those are my chocks, basically. Yeah. So that was the only intelligent thing I had done on this job, because then it was a matter of pulling the drum off of the brake assembly. And now here's the thing, what I do. A lot of times I will go to YouTube and I will watch a YouTube video. Because a lot of times you'll get the right answer. A lot of times you won't.
That's correct.
And it is up to your intelligence. It is up to your expertise to figure out the good from the bad.
Yeah.
Well, I see two videos on how to remove the brake drum from these K-vertible Chryslers, and both of them involved a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm literally beating the heck out of this thing, and it's not budging. So I send the picture to you.
Hi.
And you see the cap in the center and the nut that holds the bearing, the wheel bearing,
right,
like you would see in like the front.
Yes.
Most cars with discs and have the bearings in the front, or drum and the bearing in the hub, have that nut, and the whole shebang will come off once you remove that nut. So of course I'm going with the YouTube dictum, and then I see that thing and I actually take it off, but now the drum is kind of rattling around in there. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you remember what I said to you as a reply?
Remove the nut, you nut.
I said, yeah, take the nut off, you nut, right? Okay, good, as long as you remember.
Yes, I do remember.
Which probably hasn't been off since 1994.
It probably wasn't. None of this was a part.
Right.
But what it was a combination of the brakes were adjusted way too, I guess you could say, too far, and they weren't allowing that drum to move.
There's a ridge.
Yes, even with the nut off.
Yes.
So now I'm like, I know this thing has got an adjustment hole. There's got to be an access hole in the back of this of the brake assembly, and I can't get under there to see it because the car is too low.
There's a scissor jack in my way.
Because there's a scissor jack in my way.
Right. Oh darn.
So should have thought ahead, but I didn't. So of course now I'm doing, you've done this, and I know you've done this. You get into like that Zen touchy feely mode. I snuggle up to the brake drum.
Just did it
yesterday. I start feeling the back of the brake assembly. Slowly moving my hand around in that Zen position, going om, om, as I gently feel the back, looking for the little hole.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I should have put on some Barry White music, but I didn't. Lo and behold, there it was. It was actually between the top of the slave cylinder where the brake bleeder screw and the brake line. It was the wheel cylinder. It was directly right under that.
And
I was like, son of a gun, there it is. So I got the brake tool and I was able to pretty much disseminate which direction to go into, because I went one way and the thing locked up like you wouldn't believe.
Okay.
And then I went the other way, obviously, and I was able to loosen the brakes, pull that nut off, pull the whole assembly off. But the assembly does come apart. I just didn't do it. It does come apart. You can tell that those are two pieces. It's not just one solid piece. So, yes, I was able to solve the problem. And mind you, it was a good thing in the long run, because yesterday I went back to it to put the brakes on. And I was able to put the shoes on, reassemble everything correctly. But, of course, you take a look at that brake, take a look at the wheel bearing, and it's covered in like this glue that the grease turned into.
Ooh.
I'm like, how did this car ever roll, for crying out loud? So these are the things that I always appreciate when you do the work yourself. Because if you brought this car to a mechanic, not all mechanics, mind you, so save your cards and letters and emails and comments. But some mechanics will just put the whole thing back together again, do your brakes, and send it off and running. Right. Where I'm looking at it going, another job. So let's repack the wheel bearing. Let's repack that. And
what's your choice method for cleaning the wheel bearing before you repack it?
Clean?
Oh, okay.
Here's what I do. I always feel, to me, I don't want to remove all the old grease. What I try and do is squeeze. Here's what I do. I try and squeeze all the old grease out with my thumb. I will try and get all the old grease out with new grease. Uh-huh. Until all the old grease is completely gone, and now you're pushing out new grease. That is what I did.
All right.
I didn't introduce a solvent into the bearing. I wasn't really happy about it. I could have sprayed it with brake cleaner.
Sure.
But now I'm thinking, oh, do I really want to do that? I don't know. Maybe. Let me try it this way. So I figured it's just going to cost a handful of grease. So that's what I did. I kind of pushed, went, got inside the brake, inside the bearing, and squeezed out all the old brown stuff. And when I saw I'm using this red Molly Polly Bobbly Bobble Bobble type of wheel grease. And once I started seeing the red come through, I went, we're good.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Can you kick your audio up just a little bit? We got a report from that. Well, we sound great, but we just like to raise your audio a little bit.
Okay. My audio is now, how's that? How do I sound now? Check one,
yes,
two.
Better. Better. Yes. Very good.
Good.
The only reason I ask is it's pretty much convention to clean the bearings with grease, but I follow what you're saying. If they're not contaminated, if you don't see metal particles,
no,
pushing the old out with the new. Do you have a bearing pack? Or you do it with your hand? You said you do it.
I do have. I do have a bearing pack. I also dial a phone with it. I hold a fork with it. It's called a thumb.
I'll turn you on to this. I mean, I have one that I bought years ago, and they even sell them at Harbor Freight.
You know, of course you do, right? You have a left nostril inhaler somewhere in that garage. I know you do.
looks like I picked the wrong day for sniffing glue. And the automatic bearing packer is kind of nice because it keeps your hands cleaner. You just drop the bearing in, you press the top, and it automatically just shoots the grease out through the rollers in the top.
I am nothing but amazed that you even I would be even more amazed or not so surprised if you had it sitting next to you right now.
No,
just hold it up. Like, here it is.
It's actually at the shop because Mike had to use it on his trailer. And he was talking to me about it. I said, what are you doing? I said, I got a bearing packer. It's at the shop. It's like right under the, like, use that.
Amazing.
Like, oh, yeah.
Amazing.
I saw you use that once. Like, well, yeah. It's so use it.
You have a tool to pack your grease.
The bearings,
pack your bearings.
Well, you have a grease gun to grease the fittings, so why not?
Right, why not? Exactly. Got to keep you smiling.
That's good. So after all is said and done, how is the play or the actuation on that handbrake lever?
I haven't even gotten there yet.
Oh. Well,
because life got in the way, the only thing I was able to do was put the brake shoes on and repack the bearing, get it all together. And now I got to ask you this question because I'm at that stage now. When you're adjusting that nut.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I see the wheels turning now. When you're adjusting that nut that pushes the bearing in and seats it, what is your Ray Guarino technique for adjusting that bearing, because it's very important that you get that bearing adjusted correctly.
Yes, it is.
So can't be too loose, can't be too tight. I'll tell you this.
There's two schools of thought. There's the by feel method and there's the factory service manual method. The factory service manual actually has you tighten and go to a torque setting, then release and go to a torque setting again. But I've always used the feel method, and I went through this with Mike. And what I do, the fear is, the problem is, if you over-tighten by a couple of inch pounds, it equals like tons of force on the bearing.
Yes.
It's a ridiculous, ratio. So
yes.
The thing I do is with a pair of pliers that we debated the name over many years ago, I call them water pump pliers.
What? What? Crying out loud! Yes, what do you what?
You call them? Well, some people call them channel locks, which
channel
is
channel locks.
See, channel lock is a brand name. It's like saying Craftsman's. You know,
yeah, it's like saying Band-Aid. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But channel locks.
It's just a an angled grip set of pliers and all, because it's easier to get at it with the with those pliers on the nut. I'll spin the rotor or the drum, and kind of tighten and loosen and tighten and loosen to seat the bearing. Okay. And then what I'll do is I'll tighten. And what you do is you have to look to see where the cotter pin goes through the hole. Now, sometimes it goes through the nut. It's a castle nut. Other times there's a castellated cap that goes over the nut. Yes. And the cotter pin goes through that.
Like this one, yes.
So this is where it gets important. If where you hand tighten it, if the cotter pin can go straight through one of the holes, you're done. If it won't, the idea is never go tighter. I mean, unless you have to go like 1/132nd of an inch. I mean, if it's like so, like a hair close, you can go a little tighter. Otherwise, you always loosen it to the next looser hole and put the cotter pin in.
What's kind of interesting about that cap is that all you have to do is turn the notch, because the notches are set at an almost like a staggered pace. So if it doesn't fit one way, just turn it and reseat it.
I think they're at like, I've seen them somewhere at 60 degrees, some of them are at 30 degrees. So yeah, you can do that too. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that the rule of thumb is when in doubt, you loosen the nut, you don't tighten it, because you'll burn out. You could burn out the bearing.
Right.
And Joe just told me, he says, yeah, you seat the bearing to torque it, right? Then back off a hole or one flat on the nut, which is exactly, yeah, that's the same. That's the bi-feel method. But GM does have a torque spec. It's actually in Motors Manual too. And I followed that. It's very low. It's inch pounds. Either way, listen, I've been doing it by feel for all these years. I haven't lost the wheel bearing yet. So
right. No, so, I agree.
That's it.
Okay. Cause that's, it's funny, because that's the thing I've been doing, is doing it by feel as well. And I knew there was a certain back off. I didn't realize, as Joe, thank you, Joe. I didn't realize that it was one, what did he say again with the
well,
nut?
Well, to the nearest hole or like within one flat of the nut.
Flat.
Because the nut has six sides.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you have to go more than that, now you're a little loose, you probably could have gone a touch tighter. So, yeah. But that's,
okay.
That's it.
Yeah. So that was all I was able to do on the passenger side rear. I was able to evacuate most of the brake fluid from the master cylinder while I was doing that. And because now that's another job, because you figure once you're doing the brakes, might as well flush out the brake fluid.
Yeah.
And of course,
yeah,
I open up the master cylinder on this car and it looks like tar.
Wow.
I'm like, oh.
You know, that's one of my pet peeves.
Who? Yeah, exactly. And I've learned from this program, keep your brake fluid fresh. I mean, it's just, there's so many things you can tell. You can obviously tell if you don't touch your brake system and only flush your fluid, you can feel a difference.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Totally can, and if, a difference for the better, I should say. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm in the process of doing now. That's why I started with the passenger rear wheel first.
Yeah.
I figured once that's done, then I'll just loosen up the bleeder and start with the brake fluid. What would you say? Recondition, get rid of the old stuff out of the lines. And I want to do it all at once. I just want to do it all at once, get it all done. And because that's, to me, the best way of doing brakes, just get them done all at once. So so that's where I am now. It's just at that point.
That's good. The reason, and I just for people who don't know, the reason you want to flush the brake fluid every few years is because it's hydroscopic, meaning it absorbs moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, even though it's the sealed system, it absorbs moisture. And what I've always said is, this is one of my Mikey T-isms, brake fluid is like blood in your body. It's like, you don't know it's there. You ignore it until you can see it. And then when you see it, there's a big problem. And that's when you go running for the hills like, ah! You don't ever want to have to see it on the floor. So
right.
That's what happens when brake lines rust out. They spring leaks, and so the whole components. So, I always steer people towards go to your mechanic. Or I remember years ago I had bought tires at Sears for one of the family cars, and I'm looking at the sandwich board in the waiting area, and they had a brake fluid flush for $25.
Wow.
And I asked the service manager, I said, is that board correct? Yeah. I said, so the brake fluid flush is $25. He says, yeah. I said, how many of those do you sell? Oh, not too many. I said, you guys should be selling the crap out of those. I said, for $25, you can almost, it's not even a loss leader, because with an automatic bleeder, a guy can go around. I can bleed four wheels of brakes if there isn't a problem. And now let me say that if there is a problem, now you've just created another job for the shop.
Sure.
You know, now you may want to fix that. But if there's no problem, you can bleed four wheels of brakes in 20 minutes with an automatic bleeder.
With another salad squisher tool that you have.
One man can do that.
What is an automatic brake bleeder? What is that?
Well, there's two things I consider an automatic brake bleeder. I mean, there's three. There's one, it's a piece of hose with a one-way valve. You put it in a container of fluid, you press the brake pedal and let it go, press it, let it go. The fluid goes out. You have to open the bleeder valve. The fluid goes out through the valve into the container and does not suck back any air. And you just keep doing that till the fluid expels. That would take the longest. Then you use your handheld, like Mighty Vac or any handheld vacuum pump with a cup attachment. I love using those. That'll take you probably a little shorter because you do it at each wheel. And then you have the truly automatic ones. We used to call them the droid. It looked like R2-D2 back in the day. It was like a little round. Every shop had one. It was a round canister with wheels on it. And it looked like a little baby R2, like if R2-D2 had a baby. And what you do is you took the master cylinder cap off. There was an adapter for each car that went on that master.
Right.
It strapped down. And then you induced fluid into the master cylinder from this droid. The droid just had a diaphragm in it.
Okay.
You put shop air on it, and what it did is air was on top of the diaphragm, forcing the fluid out through the line into the master cylinder.
Oh.
Pressurized, if you will. Like if you had your foot on the brake.
Pretty cool.
All you do is open the valve on a wheel, a brake bleeding, and the fluid is just going to come out because it's now under pressure.
Right.
And it's being refilled by that machine. And you just do each wheel until the fluid comes out clean.
Wow. Done.
So now... Wow. They don't get used as much. Now I have one, Vacula was a popular one, but they went out of business. I have one made by, it's a company that made my handheld vacuum. It's a Mighty Vac. And the same thing. You put shop air on it. There's a hose that goes to the wheel. You open the valve. It just, by suction, just pulls the fluid out of each brake bleeder into its own container. And yeah, I mean, for a while I was doing a lot of brake flushes over at the shop. It becomes easy to do.
Oh, I believe it. And I'm sure the hardest part of that job is cracking that brake bleeder for the first time.
Good point. Sometimes that gets to be, if that hasn't been cracked and they're rusty, yeah, there's an art and science to that.
There sure is.
That can be a real problem.
There really is. I remember one time, the most daring I ever got was on the Seville. The brake bleeder was really, really small. It was like almost to the point of not a quarter of an inch, probably 5/16 of an inch in size. And I could not get this thing off. And I actually used an impact gun.
Oh, wow.
And it was dangerous because I thought if I lean on it with a regular wrench, I'm going to snap it.
Right.
So I need the technology of those rapid hits.
Right.
To break it free. And I'm thinking if I snap it, I just take the caliper off, bring it over to the machine shop, have them tap it out, and it would have been fine. It wouldn't have been no big deal. So I said, let me just experiment. And from a 5/16 small quarter inch socket, I had to step it up to half inch drive. it looked like a giant, like a Pilsner glass. That's right, what it looked of tools to step of sockets and extensions to step it up to the impact gun. And I went, bow, 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 bow. And it came right out.
You know what works? If you buy yourself a hand driver it's a spring loaded driver that you could put anything on. It's got a 3/8 end. So you can put a socket, a screwdriver bit. And you can make it go forward or reverse. So you put it in the reverse direction and you whack it with a hammer. So your ba 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 ba, the impact is now done by your hand.
Okay.
So it's made for smaller screws and things like that are a little more dainty. And that works. That could work too. But to answer the other question, if you do snap off a bleeder, good auto parts stores have repair kits for snapped bleeders.
Really?
I haven't used one recently. I used one years ago. Because usually I either get them out or I, and we just if it's that far gone, we change the caliper. But
I have absolutely no luck with any sort of easy out or anything like that. I have absolutely no luck. I am a pro at drilling out easy outs.
Oh, God.
A pro.
I put some pictures on Instagram about a year ago, Twitter, Instagram, and the website. I was working on, I think it was a Ford caliper, and I have pictures. I had it in a vise to shop, and it was progressively smokier because I was using the inductor on it, and I just smoked this thing. Or actually, no, maybe I was using the oxyacetylene torch. I might have been using the flame wrench. I was like, that's it. Either this is coming out or we're buying a new one. And we did that. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
It's time for a break.
Okay.
It's the bottom of the hour. So this
When we come back, can we do the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, but I will say that people should, if you enjoy what you're hearing, you may want to follow us on the social media platforms. We're Motormouth Radio on the web on motormouthradio.com, our website, and on Faccia Brutta Facebook, and also on Twitter. And on Instagram, we're a little different because it's Joe's favorite. It's real underscore Motormouth Radio. But you can follow us there for pictures of what we've... I put some pictures of Weber carburetors up this week. I was playing with the Fiat, which has not been resolved. The car's drive is worse than it was, so...
What?
Yeah, maybe we'll get into that later, but...
I would love to hear that story, yes.
Okay. So now let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, we'll take care of a little business, and we'll be back. Ray Guarino for Chris Switzer, Motormouth Radio on 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside. We remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities. An occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
All right, we are back with Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer. We had a little bit of a stumble on that stop set because I double tapped the button. I'm trying to do three things at once, and I'm obviously not too good at that. So trying to learn to chew gum and walk at the same time, but we're back. You can give us a call at 516-256-9510, where you can comment on the honor group of the hour once we find out what it is from Chris.
Yes, this week, the Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour. If you lost your car in a parking lot, you're part of us. You're part of the Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour. If that gray Camry that you drive is gone, if you're in the wrong end of the parking lot, if you're in the wrong parking lot, come and join us because you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. And celebrate and nice. Keep looking. So there you have it. That's it. So you had a problem with the Webers on the Fiat.
Yeah.
This is an interesting issue.
Oh, well, before we're done, Michael Brian just sent me a thing. It's a number one seller. You can use an air hammer. Yeah, I guess it's an air hammer. For small fasteners, I'm going to have to look into that. Brian, we may have to add that to my list. I actually apparently have a box waiting to be sent to me from Brian. We may have to add that to the list. I got a couple other small things. Matco has some great tools out there these days.
Yeah, you could put that on top of the shelf next to the salad shooter.
Right.
next to the turnip twaddler that you're going to use for whatever other tool that you have.
Right. Matco does have some... what do you call No, they have a new air hammer, you know, pneumatic air hammer. We call them air chisel. It's phenomenal. It's got a nice, the grip that you would hold with your static hand kind of spins so that you, it's less fatigue. Gives you less fatigue. So anyway, yeah, the Fiat, ever since I put this 34, it's a dual 34 ADF carburetor. Ever since I took the stock carb off and put this thing on many years ago, the car always ran a little on the rich side. I was never able to fully lean it out. I mean, I'd almost bottom the adjuster out on the lean side, and that was it. So I figured I finally wanted to do something about it. Got a hold of our good buddy Daryl, who's working at Colvin. Because I took it apart and I saw some jet numbers that didn't jive with what I've seen online. I'm seeing like a number 66 jet should be the idle jet, and mine's like a 120. I'm like, damn, it can't be twice the size.
Yeah.
Well, could it? Because then I remember the guy I got the carburetor from, although I believed it was a new carburetor, he was the guy that raced Fiat. So maybe that was set up on his race engines, you know. So yeah, could be. Then I changed the jets. I went down one step. And then I drove it yesterday. It's driving like a bag of turds. I'm not happy with it.
Just to recap, the jet is the thing that meters the amount of gasoline that's going into the carburetor, correct?
Yeah, the main jet that actually is the orifice is what the size denotes.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I had, I found a couple of things wrong that I did years ago. I've had some pressure in the fuel tank. I was trying to figure out. Well, so I told you a couple weeks ago, I had a little bit of a leak in the front out of the charcoal canister, which Well, now I'm tracing lines. And I found a little vacuum line that went to a little port on the canister, and I traced it back to the distributor. It's like that's a vacuum advance for a distributor. It doesn't go to the. So I put that in the wrong place 15 years ago. So I didn't have a port on the carburetor, but I looked up some information on my carb. I have it here, and I found that one of these places that does a lot of web work said there's a right above the base plate. There's like a plug in the base of the carburetor, and they said you can knock or drill that out and then tap it and you can put a fitting in. So I did that. I drilled it out and tapped it for I think it was for a 1032 thread, put a little brass fitting in there, and it's ported vacuum. So now there's my vacuum advance. But regardless, I'm gonna attack this again later today, because I couldn't find great information on the float adjustment. It's like a Carter where you have float level and float drop. Right. I saw no float drop information at all.
None.
I changed the float level. Yeah. So, but I did pull out, I have it upstairs. I pulled out an old climber manual I had for Fiats that was older. And the Webers are kind of all the same, you know, inside. Mm-hmm. They're all very similar. I did find some information that I'm going to use now. So pulling the top of, taking the carburetor off is a pain in the neck.
On that car, why? It's right there.
Because there's four nuts that hold it to the intake. Course, I used chrome acorn nuts.
I was going to say, you didn't want to scratch the chrome acorn nuts you used?
Three of them are easy to get at. One of them is kind of right behind one of the little vacuum chambers, and you just can't get it started. So I fought. I mean, it takes me as long to get that one nut on as it takes to get the other three on, at least. So when I put it back together and put it on the car the other day, I got that on, and then I realized, oh, I didn't drill out that vacuum passage. Oh, I can't. So I was going to do it on the car. And I'm like,
so wait a minute. You didn't bring your brain either.
No. I left it in the locker room at Grand Central Station. So I said to myself, Self? You could drill this on the car, blow some air at it, and tap it. Or you could take it off before there's gas in it and bring it back in the garage.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do it on the car so bad.
Did you do it on the car? You didn't do it on the car.
I took it off.
Ah.
Took it off. I said, okay. Boom. Took it off. Brought it in. Did the job cleanly, neatly. Got it done well. But then, of course, I had to put it back on.
And right.
I'm banging up around 8:30 at night. So the sun is starting to go down. And it's starting to drizzle. And I'm like, I'm going to get this done. If it's in a pouring rain, I don't care. The moon can be out. I'm getting this done tonight.
Wow. Well, were you working in the garage or were you out of the garage?
In the driveway.
Oh, you were in the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
But the drizzle was a factor. But the drizzle stopped. So anyway, I want to get back to that. And I guess the takeaway from all of this is, and I know this, and that's what's ticking me off more than anything, having the right and the correct information is paramount to having your brain with you. So if you don't have the right information for a job, you can't do it right. And I think I have, I'm banking on maybe the float is out of adjustment, you know. So I'm going to take a look and see.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. At least you have a path that you can follow. But what surprises me is that you are willing to work on a vehicle in the weather.
Well, it wasn't weathery until it started. I mean, it was okay before that.
I have severely limited my automotive jobs on the outside. I'll wash a car outside. I'll shine a car up outside. I may change oil outside.
Right.
Everything else is going in the garage.
Yeah. No.
Going in the garage. Move stuff out. Get in the garage. Just yesterday, I had to, because I have a two-car garage, and there's two cars that literally fill up both of those bays, I couldn't get in the seating position to work on the rear drum on the Chrysler because I had the big Mama Luke behind me that I kept banging the back of my head on. So I said to myself, just back the big one out a little bit, get the rear out into the weather so you have enough room, because I had the little one backed into the garage. I had the big one driven into the garage. So I just drove the big one out a little bit and left it out into the weather. And then I started working on the little one, the back of the little one. Well, it started to rain yesterday. So I look over and I see that the trunk and just the edge of the trunk lid to the convertible top is all getting completely soaked. But I'm like, pshaw, it's a new top. There's no problem with it. This should be leak free.
Sure. Oh boy. Next time, nose it out.
Exactly. You definitely read my mind, because that's what I did. I let the car get wet from the C panel back from the rear of the convertible top to the rear bumper. The whole car got soaked, and I kept working like a happy little boogerhead that I was. And finally, once the rain was done, I said, let me just look in the trunk just to make sure. Well, I open up the trunk and there's like water spray everywhere.
You need some weather stripping there or something, huh?
I think so. The weather stripping around the trunk lid is flat, basically. It's compressed. Sure. But what I'm concerned about are the channels. Because every convertible top around the convertible, the what would you say, the back of the convertible top, everything around there, there's a channel. Yeah. It's kind of scientific. The water flows, it's supposed to flow down into the crack of the convertible top, goes into the base of the body, and it's supposed to flow around there into these channels, and then the water gets worked out basically through the quarter panel, not the quarter panel, I'm sorry, the panel between the door and the rear wheel. There's usually openings there. Well, I'm not sure how this thing is run. I have to now investigate.
Yeah.
Because I think the water is either those channels are clogged with debris, they're not there, or there could be a host of issues. No. So another one of those trouble trees.
Like I do with sunroofs, open up like a coat hanger and send a snake down there to see if you can bust up any leaves and dried up dead mice.
Dead mice, acorns. I'm always afraid of a coat hanger around the convertible top.
Well, you want to get it down that channel. So, yeah, I mean, whatever.
What I'm going to do is I start taking it apart. You pull the well out. There's the well is that
the
spot
back well, yeah.
Between the rear seat and the edge of the convertible top. So I'll just pull the well out because it does have snaps around the back where it meets the top, and it has screws around the front of the well where it meets the back seat. So I'll just, that's a whole big cloth affair. It can all come out, and I'll just get back there and start looking and just checking it out and making sure I have the channels. And I'm thinking, you know, this is where I get into that Chrysler, that, you know, the lurch noise, you know, because I'm thinking if this car doesn't have rear channels in the back because of whomever hung the top on this car decided to take those off, I wouldn't even know how to find those. I mean, I'd have to go, geez, to search for those things would be, would be crazy. So I'm hoping that they're there.
Right.
So that's one of those things. But yeah, another discovery.
What else is there is you're listening to Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. We're at 516-256-9510. I want to tell you a quick story, Chris, about now that my car is out of paint and we have it back at the second shop.
Oh, okay.
So I could work on it in a little more quieter environment.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I found something the other day that was a little disconcerting, I should say.
Well, do you want to hold that note? Because we'll get to the phones right now.
Yes, sir.
And say hi. You're
it's
on with
Billy G.
Hey.
Billy G.
Billy Velvet.
How are you guys?
How are you, Bubba? How you been?
Good. I'm terrific. How's everybody?
We're good. We're keeping safe, my brother. Hope you are too.
So let me give you my take on manual implemented tools.
Ooh. All righty.
I did the starter in the Nova a couple of weeks ago. Okay. And what I do is I have 4x4 block, a fence post. Okay. I cut it down to size where I could put a 3/4-inch plywood platform on top of them. Okay. So technically it brings the car up like 5 inches.
Right.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute.
And what you
now,
do
when,
is first you put.
Billy, when you got a Nova, you have the 6-cylinder, right? So it's right there.
Take it easy with that. So I had, I had six chambers in my service revolver. How's that?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway,
you are old school.
The first course of action is you get the jack underneath the front frame support. Okay, and of course, being anal like we are, we put a piece of rug and then a nice piece of board so we don't crush anything. So we bring the car up high enough that we can get these 5-inch platforms underneath. Then we take the jack out and we put another 4x4 on top of the jack and we bring the car up additional height and then. Then we can get the car up high enough to do what we have to do.
Good
now,
idea.
I heard Ray say Harbor Freight. And then after I did the starter job, I said, okay, enough is enough. You know, flirting with 67 years old. I said, it may be time for a lift. Uh-huh. So I went inside that night. And I looked at Harbor Freight. And I looked on YouTube. And everybody says, by the time they get the jack, it's damaged and shipping. It comes drop shipped from the manufacturer. So Harbor Freight, you can't blame them. But
right.
And then there's so much maintenance you have to do and so much prep you have to do. I said, you know what? I went online again, and I started looking at floor jacks.
Okay.
So there's like a 3-ton Daytona jack that they're selling, and it's got a low profile where especially great for the Corvettes with the long snoot. You can get it underneath and then bring the car up.
Which is a problem.
3-ton,
yeah.
And then, but then just looking at the weight of the jack. So I'm looking for a good floor jack, low profile, that's not 113 pounds. So some of these floor jacks are 113 pounds. I mean, I know NASCAR uses they use a light type. I wonder what – the bottom line is I'm chasing down a NASCAR floor jack.
Wow.
I know, Billy, I know Ray has saved my bacon with my Pathfinder with a jack that he has. And I know he talks very highly of it, right, Ray? That aluminum thing?
On that note, Bill, the Daytona jacks, the yellow and the orange ones, are very good jacks. We have one at the shop, and it is a very good floor jack from Harbor Freight. And I see him at other people's shops all over the place. So,
Okay.
Now, to answer your thought, I do have like two of the 100-something pound. I have a Mac and a Snap-on jack, which are very expensive, a very heavy, expensive too. But right. I also have the one Chris is talking about. I had got my wife had bought me for Christmas years ago because I requested it, an aluminum Craftsman floor jack. I can lift it with one hand with the handle and just carry it. The thing is so light and throw it in the car because I was doing road calls with my daughter a lot. She was always blowing out tires. So I needed a jack that was light enough to carry around so I didn't rupture my discs again,
right.
Putting it in the back of my car. And although I wouldn't recommend that for everyday heavy-duty use, for occasional use, and I've even thrown it in the car when we took a road trip when we went away, like up to Syracuse. I'd throw it in the car just to have a something better than the factory scissor jack.
Yeah.
Again, those aluminum jacks are very nice. Mine is kind of narrow, and again, that makes it lighter. So I would say if you could, for home, if you could find one that's a little wider to give it a better footprint, I would feel better about something like that for home use.
Yeah, exactly. And what are they, 2.5, 3 ton?
They range. I mean, it depends on which one you want to get, 2, 3, 5, 10.
Yeah,
of course, the price represents.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. The second thing, switching gears. So yesterday I had the 67 in the driveway because I'm working in the garage. You know, it's a 10 by 20, so it's tight.
Yeah, sure.
So I got the back window out of the hardtop because I'm going to have the hardtop painted. So I got the hardtop completely apart. But it's on the car. So my driveway, you know, it's on the angle. So it started to rain. I said, you know what? It's only water. The window's down. The top window's open. It's only water. I got to tell you, you forget how nice the cars beat up in the rain when they got nice backs on them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I work in the rain also.
Okay.
All right.
You know, Bill, I want to tell you something. Guys. You were around Thursday, but we're going to be going to try and book Mr. Mark Mathot from Cartoons Magazine. Yeah, playing traffic.
I saw the show. I saw the show for Thursday night. It was very good. I remember that publication back in the day. You know.
Sure. So we're going to try. And, yeah. So everybody knows we're going to try and get him on here maybe next week, and we'll talk about a revival of an old car magazine.
Look, yeah, and you know what's funny? You know what I miss about CarCraft? I remember you saying that we lost some publications. The two guys in the cartoon. I wonder if he can get the rights to those guys. And you know what I mean? And just continue those stories. Those are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, I don't
two
know.
Two shade trees, you know? Chad and Krause, what was the name?
Yeah, Chris and Bernie.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Chris and Bernie, yeah. But I just wanted to check in. Everything is well, alive and well, okay?
All right, Bill. Thanks for the call.
Safe. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care. Great show,
right,
as always. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was the great Billy Velvet on Motormouth Radio with Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer. A few minutes left. 516-256-9510. You can maybe get a last thought in. So, yeah, I tell you, floor jacks, jack stands, we're covering it all. Wheel bearings, it's a filled show for service.
You know, it's amazing what happens when you and I talk to ourselves.
Yeah.
We could jump from one subject to the other. And your calls at 516-256-9510. That's for sure.
And I want to mention again, you know, Playing in Traffic is a show I've been doing on Thursday nights for a while. I did it with Lou Santiago till he left. And now Louis Lee, myself, and Matt Goman Brian is on. We bring him on and Chassis John and guests from all over the world. Louis has a great address book. But I tell you something, what I want to do, I got to clip the audio from the front end of that show because Louis Lee gives this show a talk up to the guests like you wouldn't believe, Chris. I mean, he's
really?
Saying, this is Ray. He does this national show. People know him around the world. We got to clip that. We got to use that. It's like Dennis Quintone all over again.
The perennial producer, Dennis Quintone. You know what's funny? Because I never get a chance to get on the show, and I should. I would really – I'm looking forward to it. The funny thing about my Thursday nights is Thursday is that crunch night while I get my projects done, my school projects done. Yeah. So that's my crunch night. And actually, this class session is ending this week, so as of July 3rd. So I'm going to be starting a whole new class and going through a whole new curriculum. So I may have my Thursday nights back. And if I do, you're going to be seeing this Facce Brutto. I want to come on and chat with Lewis and see the guys and just jump in all over again. Because it sounds like a great show. Always
it
does. Is.
It was crunch night for me, too, because that was the night I was working on the Fiat in the driveway. And literally, I came in the house, washed my hands, threw some water on my face, my hair, and came right downstairs and said, okay, let's do the show. And I was like, wow. You know?
It is like, you know what cracks me up is we used to do the show on Thursdays and Sundays, and we had a ball doing it on the weekday and the weekends, and I still miss the Thursday show. The Thursday show here at Motormouth Radio was always a lot of fun. It was always very unique compared to the Sunday show, and it never changed the Sunday show. It was always its own character. It had its own life. And now it's like you're reliving it again on playing with traffic. And I think that that's great that you're able to do that. You have your Thursday fix once again. It's amazing how life works. It's just, it's so funny. And the collection of people that you were able to kind of mix in with this show is just, what a shot in the arm. And just to hear Lewis give us the big hello, the big intro is just that much more.
We have kind of melded the shows, and I've made a lot of good friends from doing that show. Like I said, Chassis John, Matt Goldman, Brian. I'm not going to remember his name because I'm on the spot, but there's other guys who I've dealt with offline who are, I'm not going to try. I'm going somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, forget it. Those are my two main ones. Matt Goldman, Brian, and Chassis John are two of the tights. We kind of keep in touch all the time. But we cross produce. I've sent people over there. Dina Parisi pops in over there. Billy G now has been popping in as a viewer to see what's going on. It's kind of good. The world just expands a little bit, and we now people have to hear the same stories twice. So
that's right.
Do we have time? Real quick, so we have a minute, and then we got to get out of here because Kim's looking to come in.
All right, let's do this. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to the fun for a minute. Hi, you're on with the Motormouths.
Hey guys, it's Tom from Massapequa. How you doing?
Doing well, Tom. You got about a minute to shine. What's up, my brother?
I got one quick question. Am I more of a Thursday?
No, you're a Sunday caller. You're definitely a Sunday. You're one of our Sunday guys.
Oh, okay. You guys had to talk about what a Thursday guy is like. What are the positive attributes of a Thursday guy?
He works the weekend, so he can't listen. He has a lunch break that he can really. That's it. Well, we had a lot of our guests from the industry in on a Thursday because they don't work on Sundays. So it literally was just a different group of guys, really. Same kind of guys, just on a different day.
They were on lunch, so they would call us with their mouth full.
I remember the shows. I remember doing the Thursdays. I used to try to catch those once in a while. And you're right. I could only. 9 out of 10 times, I'd only catch you on Sundays. But anyway, guys, thanks a lot. Another good show. Always good to hear your voice. Have a great day.
Got it. So long.
Thanks, Tom. Be safe. Right. What a way to end the show, right? Right.
Oh, yeah, right?
I just love Tom.
I have to send the message to our web guy that Kim sent to me. So I'm sending it to him now. I'm going to dance and chew gum. So that's it on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino for Chris Switzer. We're going to get out of here. Next week, hopefully, we'll have Mark Mathot. Chris, what do we always say?
When you work on your car, bring your brain.
And
don't follow us home.
Right. So that's it for the Motormouths. We're out of here. We'll see you next week on 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside. We remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.